Welcome to the Championship Rounds. This is the first of, we hope, many podcasts where we discuss all things in that crazy world of boxing and we try and make it into a bit of a quiz. My name's Matt Christie and I'm joined by a selection of my esteemed colleagues. First up, the quintessential English gentleman, a man of honour with a two-point limit. It's the editor of the amateur section, it's the one and only John Dennan. So John, when did you first throw a fist in anger?
I don't know. No, I don't really throw my fist with anger.
When did you first box?
I guess around 2004 was the first time I got in a boxing ring. But yeah. I done a bit of kickboxing and stuff before that.
Yeah. Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, being allowed to punch someone's brilliant.
Cool. Okay, next up, we'll have Nick Bond, often an unsung hero in the ranks, puts all the pages together, sources the pictures, a lover of that tenacious Mexican style, and something of a guru when it comes to boxing facts and figures. So, Nick.
What is that?
Nick, what made you want to work for Boxing News?
I didn't have a job at the time. and they seem like a good bunch of guys.
Yeah. You've always been a lover of the noble art, haven't you?
I have indeed, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, cheers for that, Nick. Right, we'll go on to now our managing editor, the wise wizard of this wrecking crew. It's the silent assassin, Mr. Daniel Herbert. You joined Boxing News in 1985, Dan. What's been your favourite, what's the most memorable moment?
Quite possibly seeing Mike Tyson win the world title for the first time.
Great answer.
Yeah. It's a brilliant front page. I mean, if you look at it now, as I'm saying these words, simply awesome was a headline.
Yeah.
Never has a headline been truer than that.
Did you know something special at that point?
Yeah, but you couldn't really predict the career is going to have so many ups and downs. Yeah. I mean, some fighters, you just know they're going to be great fighters inside the ring, but he's had so many stories outside the ring as well, Mike Tyson. It's just been a crazy rollercoaster ride.
Yeah, I bet. Okay, and last, but by no means least, is our noble leader, editor Tris Dixon, who travels from Salisbury to London every day to run this ship. What is your earliest boxing memory?
Well, I remember all the guys like Collins, Eubank, Ben Watson, all those guys, but I think and they were the guys that hooked me to the sport. But before that, I remember just getting up as a kid and watching Mike Tyson fights. Yeah. You know, when I was sort of 7, 8, 9, and getting up and watching them with my dad and with my brother, and yeah, those were the first things that I remember about boxing.
Did you watch this one, this Berbick fight that Dan was just...
No, it was after that. It was around the time of Spinks and Bruno. Yeah, it was the first Bruno fight around that time.
Yeah.
So, although I was aware of the Berbick fight and what had happened at the time. So, I mean, I was only 7 or 8 at the time, but I knew what had happened, but I didn't see it.
And you've always been a Tyson fan since then, haven't you?
Yeah, I have, but, you know, it's very hard to support him after some of the things that he's done, but, you know, The recollections of your youth, obviously you always fondly recall things, and those are really good memories for me.
Chris is the White Tyson.
He is. Okay, so we'll start off with the first round called Warming Up. There's going to be 6 questions. Okay, and we'll start off with the first one, which brings us to last week's action, which was Victor Ortiz, who infamously quit. I mean, he's had some criticism. Some people have said that, you know, he was quite justified to pull out the contest. Who in boxing today is least likely to pull out of a contest? And we'll start with Dan.
I'd say Derek Chisora. If for one reason only, he seems to actually enjoy being punched in the face. Bizarre. I mean, most boxers are sensible enough to know that's not a good thing. I mean, obviously the more punches you take, the shorter your career is going to be.
Yeah.
Every boxer has some sort of sense of self-preservation. You want to try and preserve yourself. You know, big paydays down the line, because that's what you're in the business for, earning money and staying out of trouble. You want to come out of the sport with your marbles intact.
Yeah.
But Derek Chisora just seems, he just plays by a totally different set of rules from every other human being
that's a fact.
On the planet. Yeah. There's no problem being punched in the face, which is, it's hard ones to have for any normal human being. Well, as close to normal as we can be on this. Derek Chisora.
Cheers.
I've got to go with Chisora's domestic rival, Tyson Fury, who really hasn't met a right hand he didn't like. You know, the guy's taken more clean right hands than anybody I think I've seen in the last couple of years. So, and Rogan aside, I wonder if there's a bigger name in boxing who's shipped so many clean punches in the last sort of three or four fights.
Yeah.
It's been extraordinary to see him involved in the epic tussles, including with Dan's friend Chisora. You know, that he's had those consecutive fights on Channel 5 and is entertained every time, that's for sure.
I know he got knocked down in one of those fights, but at least he's shown he can take the punch, hasn't
he?
Yeah,
definitely. I think he quite enjoys it too.
Yeah.
He enjoys proving he can take it.
John?
I'm inclined to agree with Dan, but since he's already said Chisora, I'll say Chisora's trainer, Don Chong, who seems well up for a fight. He recently, I think, had some altercation with Derek over a head guard.
Yeah.
I was at the brawl in Munich and Don Charles got stuck in there. So
What was Don's fighting technique like out there?
Was pretty wild.
Yeah.
As far as I could observe. Obviously I was
I had
self-preservation on my mind at the time. But you know, and you know, he's got a good chin, he can take a tripod.
Yeah.
So probably up for it.
Nick?
What was the question again?
who in boxing today is least likely to quit? Who's least likely to bottle it?
I would have said Manny Pacquiao, but listening to the other answers, I'd say Ricardo Mayorga. If you saw the Vernon Forrest fight, I believe, he offered his chin to him on a couple of occasions. Just stood there and let him punch him, so...
He's a lunatic, isn't he?
He is, yeah.
He'll get involved in scraps anyway, won't he?
Definitely Mayorga.
Yeah. Lovable lunatic. Okay, next one, right. Talking about Ortiz, Floyd Mayweather probably didn't have a chance to watch Ortiz, what with him being locked up in Nevada under those horrendous conditions that he keeps complaining about. Who would you most like to put in a cell with him and why? And this time we will start with Tris.
Well, I think it's got to be his old rival, Oscar De La Hoya. I think he must be missing Miss Jackson, and we all know that Oscar's prone to wearing fishnets, and I'm sure that would cheer Floyd up behind bars. Could make his next month or 6 weeks go a little bit quicker. I'm sure he's called Oscar the Golden Girl as well before, so... he's had his way with him in the ring, so let's send Oscar in there.
Everyone's happy. John?
I'd put myself in there.
Yeah.
Just so, you know, we could hang out. I think we'd have a bond. I'd read him my own articles. I'd get a great story out of it.
Would you offer him out? Would you ever scrap with him?
I don't think that would be advisable. I'd definitely stand behind him if there are any kind of
Because you got that long right jab, haven't you? You could keep on the end of that for a bit.
Is that educated right jab?
In the prison cell, I need room to move. You know, I'm a pecker and a poker. I need to run for it.
Yeah, I was about to say you'll need room to run as well if you start jabbing him.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't do that.
No.
But thumb war, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thumb war, 3 out of 5.
Yeah. I've got small, weak thumbs though, so I lose that.
Nick.
I'd say Leonard Ellerby.
Yeah?
Yeah. He seems to be everywhere else Mayweather is.
Yeah.
So why not in prison? I don't quite know what he does for Mayweather, but he seems to have a lot to say for himself.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, bosom buddies and all that, so good luck to him.
Dan?
I would say Scott Harrison. He's probably doing that welterweight now out of training. I know he's coming back fairly soon, but he's pretty welterweight, same weight as Mayweather when they're not training. It would be quite interesting because Scott Harrison would probably threaten Floyd in Glaswegian, and Floyd wouldn't understand him. Floyd would probably threaten Scott Harrison in his trash talking and street talking. Scott Harrison wouldn't understand Floyd, so you have two guys threatening each other, and neither would understand what the other guy's saying, so it would be bizarre.
Right, okay.
I'm sure they'd get the gist of each other, wouldn't they?
I think so.
Universal language of violence.
Right, moving on to the next question. We were talking a bit about Chisora earlier and Don Charles. And people have said that, you know, whatever happened at the David Haye, after the brawl they had in Germany, whatever happened, David Haye and Derek Chisora are always going to get it on in the ring. It's going ahead on July the 14th, but a lot of people are against it. If you could put two unpopular figures together in a boxing ring, who would you choose to be in the opposing corners? And this time we'll start with John.
Well, you know, Jack Johnson and Muhammad Ali were both highly unpopular
at their
careers. And
a cracking brawl, I bet.
With the styles gel, though? I don't know.
Who would you pick there? Who would you pick, Johnson and Ali?
Great question.
That is a great question. I'd probably pick Ali.
Yeah.
But how many rounds?
Say 15. We'll do 15.
All right, I'll pick Ali. Yeah. You know, Johnson had the experience over 20.
40.
Right. So you'd pick Johnson, say, if it was scheduled for 40.
Yeah. If it was in 1912, I'd pick Johnson. But in 1973, I'd pick Ali.
Yeah.
Okay, good one. Right, Nick?
Good question. Unpopular. I'll probably go for Prince Nassim and Danny Flexen. Nassim, people love to hate, I believe. Although, you know, he could punch for sure. He's only a little guy. Danny Flexen's a bigger guy. But he was once famously called the Jeremy Clarkson of boxing. Which people love to hate. Danny also loves Nassim. Quite obsessed.
He does, yeah.
And it'd be interesting to see how they gelled as combatants.
Yeah. Were you a fan of Naz back in the day?
I respected his power, but his arrogance wasn't endearing.
Right.
It isn't, but it'd be a good fight.
Oh, it would. It would.
Danny actually beat Steve Turner in a round. Quite impressively.
Can we see that anywhere?
Probably somewhere on YouTube. But
might be in Jim Jacobs' old vault.
And that seems physique now resembles Steve.
True.
One way or another. And it would be a good fight. I'd pay to see it.
Yeah.
Good question.
Thanks, mate. Okay, next, Dan.
Mike Tyson and Sonny Liston. Two very unpopular guys. Yeah. Two guys who worked on intimidation. Interesting to see if either would intimidate the other. Probably better than Liston. Probably better Liston to intimidate Tyson, but who knows. Also, two guys that were unpopular because outside the ring, inside the ring, tended to quit when they going got tough.
Didn't Tyson sort of imitate Liston? You know, didn't he base his whole...
Yeah, he tried hard. Tyson, in those days, Tyson did used to watch lots of films of old fights.
Isn't often the imitators still hate him. Isn't as good as the original.
Old fights. So.
Foreman imitated Liston as well, didn't he? Spent a lot of time with him when he was coming up, and he tried to adopt that kind of persona, which wasn't really him.
Liston, he was.
I think Foreman was quite a brooding guy in the early days. Yeah. He did change a bit. Yeah. Well, maybe that's part of it was an action to a certain extent.
He was a young man, wasn't he?
So angry young man.
Because there's footage of him after his first professional fight, where he's very much like Ali. He's like, oh, did you see me in there? I was fantastic. And then a few fights later, he's completely changed. It's quite strange.
I remember reading an interview with Ford, and he said he used to steal kids' hamburgers at school. Even if you weren't so hungry, you just did it because just to be the best guy. And
when you need a hamburger, you need a hamburger, though, don't you? Yeah.
Well, he probably was hungry as well. So super well.
Okay, and Trish?
Well, thinking about unpopular guys and guys with all surly characters, I'd like to see a face-off between Roberto Duran and Mayorga, who Nick mentioned earlier. I can imagine, you know, just those guys together is just crazy, you know, it's got crazy written all over. You've got Duran knocking out a horse and Myoba trying to bring it round with a slice of pizza and a cigar. And, you know, we know that two guys going crazy at each other's cells. I mean, just look at Upton Park and what's going on there. So with all that rampaging machismo, you know, you could tell us a hell of a story with it. And I mean, it would be a great story really until Duran put his hands on him. Then it would be, be all over.
Sorry, go on.
Whether they could kiss and make up afterwards, I don't know. It's, but yeah, I mean, you know, those guys, imagine them together, just be.
Do you remember there was that myth that Tony Iola chased Duran down the street? Do you remember that?
I've never heard that.
Young Tony Iola wanted to fight Duran and he chased him down the street or something.
Is that right?
No one else heard that.
I don't like it.
It seems unlikely, that's why I'm questioning it. I've heard it on more than one occasion, yeah.
What weight would you make Mayorga and Duran?
Probably middleweight.
Yeah.
Probably middleweight.
Yeah. Okay, is that, yeah, we all, yes? Okay, let's get to the next question then.
Who's winning, by the way?
Who's winning, you'll see when we get to the end. Right, okay. Right, Amir Khan has had a bit of time off recently. Which is no fault of his own. And that layoff, I mean, in years to come and how he reacts to it and what have you, could be a defining moment in his career. I mean, we've all kind of been around for Amir. It seems like he's been around forever since he was 17. But Nick, what's your favourite Amir Khan moment?
Lee.
That's Lee. That's Lee, who's doing what? I don't want to say work experience. It sounds
like intern.
Intern.
Minion.
He's just in watching this chaos. You enjoying it, Lee?
He's helping me. Sorry, what was the question, Matt?
Your favourite Amir Khan moment?
I remember just after the Olympics and the ABAs when he. Got decked by Craig Watson. Anyone else remember that?
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
And you know, his aura of invincibility appeared to be shattered. So that
it was on the news and everything.
The news the next morning. It was a big story. So that sticks in the mind.
Yeah. He's never. He's going to be constant question marks about whether he can take the punch, isn't he?
And then of course the Prescott loss.
Oh yeah.
Was pretty incredible.
That was brutal, wasn't it? Unexpected.
But he's rebounded well, so...
Yeah, that's full credit to him, full credit to the man. Dan?
I would say it was beating the career in the Olympics. It's really tough on the career.
He's
a gnarled old veteran, been around for years, and it looked like everyone had to rumble on the streets of Seoul where he came from. And Khan was a 17-year-old kid, I mean, barely started shaving. He thought this was a really tough test for Khan. He just beat him, he smashed him in one round, and wobbly legged and breathing around the ring. And thought, well, Khan's really special there.
Yeah.
The thing is, you know, you get 17-year-old British prospects win lots of titles in Britain, they go to the Olympics, and they lose to somebody from a country you never heard of. That's just so different to see a British guy just dominating the Olympics out like that.
Yeah.
I think so. It was a quarterfinal, I think, the Korean. So he won a medal as well, at least.
He showed his power, didn't he? He had
the power, yeah. A 17-year-old kid.
Those Koreans are tough.
I've been fortunate enough to be at a lot of Khan fights, from his debut against David Bailey all the way up to the most recent fights. Probably the moment that really sticks in my mind of anything, though, even ahead of the Prescott loss, was when he was really badly hurt by Willie Limond, which was just so unexpected. It was on such a big showcase bill at the O2 Frank Warren was promoting. And it was just a real shock to see him in that state. I mean, there had been question marks about his chin beforehand. Like Nick said, it's relatively fresh that Craig Watson had dropped him in the amateurs. I think he'd already been floored by the Frenchman, Rashid Drilzan, by then too. But to see him really hurt and then see referee Marcus McDonald almost seemingly help him back up. And then Khan's taken
it.
No. And I mean, Limond was only coming up from featherweight as well, so... So I mean that was a real memorable moment that really sort of sticks in the mind.
You were there for because he proved his mettle against Maidana. You were there for that when he was being
Yeah, definitely. And I mean,
do you think he was going to get stopped at that point?
Yeah, I mean, any time in the last 9 minutes, feasibly, you could have seen him being stopped. But, you know, he stood up to some real punishment, took some incredible shots, managed not just to stay up, but to see out the fight.
And
yeah, I mean, that was an amazing night, probably the most exciting fight of Khan's career, I'd say.
Yeah. John?
So following on from what Dan said, just a 17-year-old boy beating men to get to the Olympic final was incredible, and more specifically, just the way he kind of connected to the general public at the time. I seem to remember watching the final on a big screen somewhere, which is, you know, so rare for a boxer, so rare for an amateur boxer, for everyone to be talking about. And, you know, obviously, more recently, the picture he tweeted of him holding a wadge of dollar bills in front of a stripper shows he's become the kind of man I can respect, Well, he's certainly grown into the role. Yeah.
Okay. From hero to zero, Larry Olabamowo was, he came clean for drugs and, you know, he's been very honest about it. But those, you know, he had muscles growing out of his eyeballs, it wasn't the most shocking news. What's the least surprising news you've heard in boxing? And we'll start with Dan.
Would have to be Jose Sunan being re-elected as the WBC boss, which has happened numerous times. It's four times than I can count. He's been there since, actually, 75, I think, or something. Ridiculous length of time.
The WBC come in for a lot of stick. Do you think they do good things for boxing as well?
No. Does that answer your question? But I know they do run some sort of pension scheme, which is... They issue press releases about it. People say that's a good thing to run a scheme or to give them
there's any proof of that?
Money to boxers who have hit hard times. But really, that's the least they should do. I mean, they should be doing a lot more than that. They're raking millions of dollars in big fights in Las Vegas. Yeah. If you go to those big fights, sure, you can come up with some sort of adequate pension scheme for boxers or do more of a job for them. I mean, it's not that hard, surely.
Truth.
Least surprising news, a bit of a sad one actually. It was hearing the news that Johnny Tapia had died recently. I mean, even with fighters who seem to be dying young in the it's happened throughout boxing. I mean, it was just it still shocks you and amazes you to hear it each time. But with Johnny Tapia, it was almost inevitable that every time you woke up and he wasn't in the news, it was almost more shocking than the fact that he was still around. So I mean, you can almost breathe easily now knowing that that such a sad story that involved such a nice bloke and a real warrior who was permanently a danger to himself, that it's over. So yeah, really sad news, but very unsurprising at the same time.
John? Follow that, pal.
I don't know. Everything seems to surprise me. About me. So I'll go with Golden Boy, kind of severing links with VADA, the voluntary anti-doping organisation. Because as soon as they start actually doing what they're meant to do and catching people out, classic case of shooting the messenger.
Yeah. Good answer.
Thanks, mate.
No worries.
Good question.
I was least surprised to hear David Hayes coming out of retirement. can't work out why people retire when quite clearly they're going to fight again.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's an attention seeking thing or what, but Will knew he'd fight again. And here we go.
I think he made such a song and dance about the whole "I'm going to retire on this day" that he had to go through with it. But at no point did he say, "I'm definitely not coming back either" in his retirement speech.
Didn't they? That's what you're saying.
I'm agreeing with you.
No, you disagree with me. You're humiliating me.
I'm agreeing with you.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, anyway, right. Have we done everybody? I can't remember. Yeah, haven't we?
That was a Johnny Nelson moment there.
No, we haven't. Yes, we have. We've done everyone right. Next one right. When is Mike Tyson's birthday? Is it today?
No, it's the 30th.
It's not.
Oh, it's the 30th. Yeah. Yeah, he turns. I mean, we talked about him earlier, and I remember when he beat Berbick and what have you. And it's shocking, really, how he's now 46. And he was what, 20 then? 19, 20? He's 20, wasn't he? He's 20.
Captain
11,
there's no one can stop him. Listen to Parker, no, I'm Alexander, he's no Alexander. I'm the best ever. There's never been anybody like me. I'm Sonny Liston, I'm Jack Dempsey, there's no one like me. I'm there for, there's no one that can match me. My style is impetuous, my defense is impregnable, and I'm just ferocious. I want your heart, I want even children.
Exactly.
Praise be to Allah, but that came after.
Praise be to Allah.
Yeah. Just after talking about eating someone's children, it's like, what?
I mean, he was known for his prowess in the ring, but he was also known for mad moments like that, outbursts and what have you. I mean, but boxing as a sport is littered with famous outbursts, famous quotes. Tris, what's your most memorable?
It's the one that just keeps coming back to me almost every day. Makes that sound in my head. And it's just Bob Arum saying, yesterday I was lying, today I'm telling the truth. And it's like, you know, that's just boxing summed up. You know, you can speak to anybody in boxing and they'll try and get away with sort of that outlook. And it's just, it's rife within the sport, all levels, and it kind of hits the nail on the head. And, you know, even if Bob Arum hadn't coined it all those years ago, I'm sure plenty of people would have done since.
Definitely. John?
I said recently, Tony Belly jumping up at a press conference saying to Nathan Cleverley, I'll paraphrase, let's do this now, you flipping rat. It was a fine moment for all. But yeah, Marvin Hagler said to Tommy Hearns ahead of the war, you know, don't make me bleed, it only makes me meaner. One of the hardest lines around.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to make Marvin bleed, would you?
But he did bleed, didn't he?
He did.
I know, that's what makes it. And he got me.
It was a prophecy, wasn't it?
Exactly, he lived up to it.
Great answer, mate.
Nick, what's your most memorable phrase or quote?
I thought this was about Tyson. So, I mean, I've never heard a battle cry quite like, I'm going to eat his children. That to me is the best.
Yeah, especially because they didn't have any at the time either.
Yeah, no. Yeah. But have you ever heard anyone threaten to eat a child? Oh, it's good, isn't it? That'd be my number one.
No. Yeah, it was a memorable moment. Dan?
Yeah, I go back to Tyson as well. When he said, obviously he stopped somebody, I can't remember who it is. He said, I want to drive his nose up into his brain.
Oh, Jesse Ferguson.
People say, oh, this is a terrible thing to say, and I agree, but it's like the person deep down talking, really. It was shocking, it was horrible, but you know, you hear so many interviews where people say what they think they're supposed to say, what they think the listener wants to hear. But Tyson just said what he thought. I mean, I don't doubt he actually meant it seriously.
Yeah.
Was like the first time the facade really dropped, wasn't it? The whole Customato and the kid, the whole Custom the Kid story. And it was the first time, I think, people could see what Tyson was actually like.
He had a carefully cultivated image with Jim Jacobs and Bill Cason,
Who was it? He said when he hit them, they sounded like a girl squealing.
That was Tyrrell Biggs. Because they had that big rivalry going back from the amateurs.
Biggs in that contest longer than he needed to be, and didn't he really give a proper beating, didn't he, at the 7th round? Right, well, that brings us to the end of the first round. Did you want to enjoy that?
Yeah, enjoy that, Matt. Good job.
Cheers. Okay, next up is round entitled Achilles Heel. Now, you've all going to have a minute talk about something that in boxing that really, really gets up your nose, really gets on your nerves, and how you would rectify this issue if there is a solution to it. Who do we start? It's going to be John. John at first. Sorry, mate. Have we got a minute? Yeah, okay.
All right.
Right, you ready, John?
A whole minute?
A whole minute, yep.
Okay. Well, I suppose, I mean, you know, judges' decisions in boxing, you know, decisions seeming to go the wrong way is really, you know, it just leaves as a fan, you know, everyone involved just feels so short-changed if a majority see the, or a vast majority see the wrong decision in a prize fight. And it really, you know, it damages boxing as a sporting contest if you can't get the right winner.
Yeah.
You know, maybe you could have, you know, sort of video judges who, if one team appeals within, what, half an hour of the, you know, of the end of a bout, judges review it. Obviously, it would have to be an extreme case of, you know, of poor decision making. But then why not make it possible to overturn results or make them a no contest or order a rematch? You know, it wouldn't even have to be like as so dramatic as well, which has just become part of the sport.
That's really good, John. That's really good. I think that's a subject that's close to all of our boxing parts, isn't it?
So have I won?
You're in the lead. You're in the lead.
You're in the lead because you are the only person who's done it so far.
That's mad.
Nick?
What's the question again?
A gripe that you've got, you know, your biggest gripe in boxing really annoys you. And how would you explain it and then tell us how you would, if there's a solution to it?
Well, nothing really annoys me per se, but I'm not on board with the whole H. Azora business.
Okay.
I think the fight doesn't mean a lot in the boxing landscape. I think, for example, the Klitschkos, who are the champions, they deserve more attention, press attention, than Paige Azora, but it's got controversy in themselves, so, hey.
Will you watch it?
Probably, yeah.
It's a good matchup.
It is a good matchup, but
it leaves a
bit of a sour taste in your mouth.
Yeah.
What do I know?
Right. Okay. We move on to Dan.
I'll say Olympic qualifying.
Okay.
We've got the Gutmann Games coming around the corner, just 4 weeks away now. So it's top of the agenda. The Olympic Games. It's going to be a great tournament. The fact is many of the world's best boxers, or quite a few of them, won't be there. At the moment, Olympic qualifying is done on a continental basis. There's so many places apportioned to each continent of the world. Now, theoretically, it's according to how strong boxing is in different parts of the world, but in reality, it doesn't work that way. We have a ludicrous situation where I think Australia has more boxers qualified for these London Olympics than any other country. But the only reason that's the case is because the Australians have won those places by beating boxers from places like Fiji or Samoa or Pacific Islands I've barely even heard of. I had to look up on the map, see where they were, and look on Google to find out where Kiribati was or American Samoa or something.
Yeah.
And yet the Australians have 9 boxers out of a potential 10, and Americans have 9 as well. Russia has 8 or something. Britain has 7. Ukraine, really strong countries, have something like 8 or 9. And the Australians have 9. They're all going to lose in the first round of the games. So it's just a joke.
It's gone out of control.
It's good.
I'm ranting. I have to get it off my chest.
And a bunch of them could get knocked out at the Olympics as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Going back to my point, I think my main point is that this fight has been made off the back of nothing more than a street fight.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of my biggest concern with it.
Yeah.
You know, it promotes the fact that boxers can fight and behave in that way outside of the ring, and they'll get rewarded for it. That's my point.
That's a good point. Strengthened an already solid point.
Thank you.
Okay.
So Dan,
should I go back to my round then? Have you finished off the last 10 seconds of my round?
You may continue.
Chase?
Okay, yeah, it's a more logistical point in the sense that I think the main events are just going on too late at the moment, sort of 10, 11 o'clock, even 12 o'clock, and cards are being drawn out too long. We've got sort of 15 fights on a bill. I went to the fights the Mayweather-Cotto fight, and the undercard started at 2:30 in the afternoon. And you know, by the time it's sort of all done, it's sort of 1 a.m. and you're sort of losing the will, even after a great fight. But the thing is, to reach the mainstream audiences, you need to go on at a prime time, which is like 8-9 o'clock. You don't see Britain's Got Talent on a 11:30 on a Saturday night, or you know, the X Factor and stuff. You want to reach a big audience, you need to go on at a normal time, and that means starting and finishing at sort of 8, 9, 9:30, no later than that. It was the same with Prize Fight the other day. It was on 9 till 12 o'clock on a weeknight. You know, only hardcore fans will stay up till midnight to watch a prize fighter tournament, especially if it's not living up to expectation. There are only hardcore people stay up till midnight to watch to watch that.
Well, why not have fights on a Sunday afternoon, like the football? No.
What do you do other sports, isn't it? I mean, tennis or too golf or church.
Saturday night devoted to other things, isn't it? No. Sunday afternoon fight? Why not?
Wednesday's better for me.
Tell them I'm just saying. Bring the prices and tell them.
Yeah, when you get your next credential form, John, just say, sorry, you know, would you mind just shifting the event to Wednesday?
Wednesday up in my schedule.
Yeah. Right then, guys. This is where four become two. We're into the championship round, the final round. This is where you defend the indefendable.
I actually justified. Think we should have had open scoring through this.
I've got a little confession. Maybe we should have had scoring full stop. So for the sake of my job here at Boxing News, I think the joint winners are Tris and Dan.
Yes.
And they go head to head. So the
at the moment a recount.
Was looking
that's right, Dan and I just recounted. Dan and I just recounted
in the first place, let alone a recount. So I apologise, hopefully I'll get that problem rectified. Sure. It was all my fault. I was just enjoying it all too much. I forgot about scoring. Anyway, the point of this round is I'm going to give you something, a ridiculous statement in boxing, and you have to justify that, you have to agree with that. Okay, so Dan, right. Timothy Bradley deserved the decision against Manny Pacquiao.
Now, that is a hard one to defend, because I was there and I thought Pacquiao won clearly, but to defend it and say it the other way, I have to agree with Danny Flexon and pariah within the boxing community, and I'll be shunned by everybody on this floor, or 100 of us. I'll be a figure of fun for the next few years, but I'll try. I think there were maybe four rounds, possibly five rounds, which you could at least make a case, try making a case for Bradley winning those rounds. Say, well, he had a good jab later. The last four or five rounds of the fight, even then, you have to overlook the fact that Pacquiao won 6-7 rounds clearly, but you could say Pacquiao slowed down and Bradley kept working the same rate. He was persistent and consistent and kept doing the same thing. He was in the fight. He was at least competing. He got his jab going and threw some good punches. And
I reckon that's 30 seconds.
He kept going, so for persistence and nothing else, you could...
Have you watched the fight since? Have you watched it? Because I know you're ringside.
I haven't watched it. I tend not to watch fights again.
When the final bell went, there was no doubt in your... Because you scored it 119
to 109, yeah.
Oh, 109. Were you just convinced that Pacquiao had...
Yeah, I didn't even think it was that close a fight or even to something worth discussing about. I mean, often at ringside, you compare notes with reporters and it just seemed so clearly going one way.
Yeah.
There's nothing really to discuss, and I was just shocked when the decision came out.
Did a lot of jaws drop at ringside?
Well, we also looked at each other saying, you know, what's that about?
Have we
been asleep for the last hour or something? Well, sort of when you jet lag, you do feel tired. You always do start breathing. Not during the main events. But,
Okay. Tris, well, I'll let you have a bit longer than 30 seconds as well. Sorry, I better give you the statement first. Sugar Ray Robinson has no business being considered in the test 10 best fighters of all time.
Well, I think it's clear for everyone to see that it's just become the norm to accept him as the number one, you know. Start thinking outside the box. Look at the other guys, you know, give them credit. You know, look at Armstrong, look at Ali, look at Duran, look at even further downscale, you know, people like Whittaker. And I mean, people like Roy Jones, I mean, immensely talented. You know, put him up there above Ray Robinson, you know. I mean, he stepped up to heavyweight. Ray Robinson, you know, couldn't even get the job done at light heavyweight, crying out loud. So of course, yeah, I think you know, you could well think outside the box and put Robinson outside the top 10. In fact, come to think of it, maybe even look at the top 20.
Okay, that was good. That was good. However, I think this week, the premier podcast, the winner of the championship rounds, is Mr. Daniel Herbert.
Thank you so much. So, what's the prize?
John's ahead on point.
Okay, well, that's about it, I think, for the championship rounds. Thanks everybody, or whoever, for listening.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure sitting here and presenting this to everybody. Cheer everyone.
I think